Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Rick Cram. Over the years, Rick built his career around helping organizations communicate, lead, and drive positive change. Also, drawing on decades of marketing and leadership experience. Along the way, his own journey through six knee surgeries taught him that resilience is as much about the conversations we have with ourselves as the strategies we use with others. After all the pain he experienced through his fourth, fifth, and sixth surgeries, Rick had this innate response to bring compassion to others having a difficult time in his life. So he became a trained caregiver. Since the seventh surgery, leaving him facing severe chronic pain, Rick knew it was time to blend all he'd learned into a single, purpose-driven methodology. His mission and purpose is to equip and encourage individuals to plan to be your best as you navigate pain. And Rick, with that, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for quite a while now.
Likewise, Dave. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. And I think we were introduced mutually, I believe it was through Steve Ramone. Am I correct?
Yes, yes.
Because, yeah, you had been on Steve's podcast, and then Steve reached out because he thought you would be a great fit for mine. And obviously, we had an introductory call, and we found that we aligned on many levels, and that brings us to this moment today.
I've been looking forward to it, Dave, for a couple of reasons. The same thing, having another great conversation. Really feel as though we connected on those different levels. And as I've been making headway with your wonderful book, there are a few things that you share in there that I think we'll probably get to. I was listening to your conversation with, is it Jason Reed?
Yes.
And what a powerful, powerful conversation the two of you had. I'm going to probably watch that, certainly not only all the way through, but multiple times. It's really real. There's so much goodness in there.
Yeah, Jay's a very interesting man. He's brilliant. He's compassionate. And he has a heart of service based on his own tragedies in his life. And he was just a great guy to talk to. And it was really, for me, a very powerful episode.
Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And I know Jay will be happy when if I connect with him and let him know that his message has had an impact on at least another individual that I know. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
So I guess I got a few questions. So we will get right down to it. What do you think?
Let's do it.
First question I have is tell our listeners about the experiences that have contributed to your life path and your life passions.
Great question. I just found a couple of weeks ago this life map that I had actually gone through with a group, the process of charting different points of my life and which ones did I learn the most from. My life sort of maps out as if there's a seismograph during an earthquake. A lot of zigzags up and down. There's a lot of highs and a lot of lows. I will say this, that I've learned the most from the most painful experiences in life. What I've grown the most from are the most painful experiences in life. Whether it's the loss of my first son, the day he was born, the seven surgeries, the trauma that I experienced in the first three surgeries after the injury, the second set of three surgeries, four, five, and six in my late 30s, approaching 40. And actually, since 2019, my knee is basically in a perpetual state of trauma. And I actually what's the word I want to use? Savor. I'll use the word savor, the growth. And it also contributes to my having an attitude of gratitude, especially when I need it most. I've got gratitude for all 13 incisions and the pain I've experienced, because without them, I wouldn't be the man I am. Without a doubt, there have been wonderful highs in my life. Having 3 kids, success in business, becoming a trained caregiver. One of the things I was really seeing and connecting with in your book are those connections between what we experience in life and how those are catalysts for everything from what we learn to what forms our sense of purpose and mission.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things in the book that Patty and I talked about was Crow medicine, which is honor the past as your teacher, honor the present as your creation, honor the future as your inspiration. And it also reminds me of something that Soren Kierkegaard had said, is that life is lived forward, but is best understood backwards, you know. And I think when we look at our past, we understand all of the experiences that shaped our present, and both good and bad. I think you're right. I think we tend to learn more from the negative experiences or the challenging experiences because we're forced to take a look at everything that we stood for, our priorities, our beliefs, and we make a determination in terms of, based on the challenges I'm facing, how am I going to move forward in the world and what kind of a world is this going to look like for me? And right. What kind of a person do I want to be in that world that I now choose to create for myself after tragedy?
And it is a journey where it is how we respond to the pain and go from there. You probably know, as I do, some people who experience pain of one kind or another, there are many kinds of pain, and don't go through it. They don't grieve it. They don't process it. They don't grow from it. For a variety of reasons, and for some, it's not their fault. But everything about me, the way I was brought up, my values, the things I believe in, I actually had become quite deliberate to grow and to so that I can move forward. And there, we'll get into some of the reasons why. There's one particular phrase that you said in your book. I actually jumped to one towards the latter third of the book in terms of driving change. You refer to that wonderful question, what do you believe? And I've found, as I've gone through life, my beliefs have evolved, deepened. We believe in our values, who we are and who we want to become are all connected as part of our belief system. And I believe, when I was first diagnosed with a problem after the 7th surgery, the first time my orthopedic doctor said surgery is no longer an option to fix what is wrong. And he gave me a diagnosis when I was pining, I was truly crying for, I was desperate for some kind of relief. And I still am about 6 years later. And he gave me a diagnosis that sounded like, and as I researched it, it's called complex regional pain syndrome. Some doctors and practitioners have ruled that out. But when I first got that diagnosis, I panicked, especially when I read how it's also called the suicide disease. It's not a disease, it's a condition. But when I read that, I thought, in terms of my belief, that's not going to be me. The pain is so awful. I'm going to dedicate myself, based on my beliefs and my values, doing some good things because of this, not just a pain journey, but a journey of resilience, my own unique resilience and my own unique way of thriving. So that passage, that one question really spoke to me.
Well, and again, the other part of that, and you know, my co-author for the book, Reverend Patty Farino, taught me this, is that what you believe is okay. I mean, it's not for us to judge if somebody else's belief is better than ours or our belief is better than theirs. It's simply to understand it, witness it, and see what we can take from that that may help us in our own journey. It's that process of integration and the development of critical thinking. And it's also, you know, refining our beliefs in a way, or modifying or expanding our beliefs to prepare us for the challenges ahead, particularly when one of those life transitions was managing very chronic pain, learning to manage chronic pain, having complications from numerous surgeries. You had to find a way to expand your belief system to be able not only to integrate that, but to manage it and also be of service to others who are experiencing chronic pain issues.
Exactly. That last point is foundational to part of what the Plan to Be Your Best method is all about. I didn't know how meaningful the Plan to Be Your Best approach would be even to me when I first developed it. I was asked to by the leadership of the Federal Home Loan Banks about 12 years or so ago. They came to me. Leadership knew of my background in marketing, communications, and leadership, as well as being a trained caregiver that knew how to help people navigate difficult things in life. And they said, Rick, we're in a form of pain. We're experiencing a challenge that we've never faced before. Give us a program on how to lead ourselves and our teams through this. It was really striking to see, you know, we need to know how. And that means we need answers to questions. We need answers we don't yet have. And anytime, whether it's been a business or an individual who comes to me, how do I go through this? How do I deal with this? I really like to hear people say, such as asking questions, because they're flexing that curiosity muscle. And is that curiosity our first and most fundamental emotion that we have? We're all born curious. And to observe a baby, curious to see what the world is like and how do things work. The same thing even here as an adult after 50 years of navigating pain and these surgeries, I'm still flexing that curiosity muscle and emotion and being resilient.
I like to tell my students, stay curious.
Yeah.
Ask questions, challenge everything, but do it respectfully.
Right.
Build your critical thinking skills by embracing or entertaining perspectives that are different from yours. That's all part of intellectual curiosity. And it sounds like that's also part of the Plan to Be Your Best method as you navigate pain. It sounds like you encourage curiosity and exploration, particularly in the midst of life transition.
So I found that it is when you have the kind of pain that I experienced, for example, and there's no diagnosis, there's no solution, there's this shift that I've found is really helpful. And that is, instead of having a goal to get back to 90% pain-free, to make your approach and focus on process-oriented goal. It's in those processes, those that the unfolding of the things that you can learn from the journey, the things that you can learn, and basically, to a great extent, I'm not sure if I really thought of it this way before, but the Plan to Be Your Best approach is all about learning and using what you learn, and sometimes relearning things over and over again. Resiliency is rebounding again and again. It's interesting that we're meeting at this particular time, Dave, because since you and I last talked, back in January, my baseline pain went to about 3 to 4 times the norm. And it was like that through most of the winter and early spring. So it was profoundly challenging. So I did a couple of things quite deliberately, and that was to really sort of increase how much I'm learning. And it ended up translating into further refining some aspects of Plan to Be Your Best and contributing to the book that I write. And it also helped lead to, even though the pain has brought up some trauma that I experienced in the first 3 surgeries, a different kind of trauma in the 4th, 5th, and 6th, I've had a breakthrough of healing that the trauma from when I was 18, 19, and 20. And there's been this wonderful energy that comes from it. And it's actually by talking with you about it, it's a way for me to tap into that and feel that energy right now.
And, you know, I think any method that you come up with, and the plan to be your best just before we had this conversation was very multifaceted, very thorough. It took a look at the whole mind, body, spirit connection and a very holistic approach. But as we grow, the approaches that we use to teach others to be of service are going to evolve as well. As we learn more about ourselves, that's going to come out in the work that we do with others. And it's just part of that natural evolution and growth process that for me is going to occur until the day when we leave this earth. And, you know, growth is ongoing. It doesn't stop. And I think for me, when I discover new things about myself, particularly as it relates to my grief journey or anything that can enhance my teaching methods, I'm excited to share that because it's part of my evolution. And I can bring that into any type of service situation or classroom situation. And we can be live models, literally, for continued growth and evolving at any particular age. And growth does not stop at any particular age. It is ongoing.
So true. I'm going to come back to something you just said, but you mentioned grieving. I've doubled down on being more deliberate in my grieving, especially through the winter and spring. I did some grieving every day. Good grief. A healthy way to work through and to process what is painful is part of how I, honestly, you know, one part of the plan to be your best approach has to do with these eight domains of thriving. There's the three steps of resilience that perhaps we could talk about, but there's the bold, the B and best, like plan and best are acronyms. The B stands for boldness. And there's this wonderful quote, I'll see if I can come up with who said it, but there's magic and power in boldness. And one of the ways that I found so helpful is to be bold, be very assertive in my grieving. And in a way, it helped save my life.
Yeah, talk some more, because I did want to get into your domains of thriving and steps of resilience. So as long as we're going down that path, why don't we continue?
Very good. Let's start with the three steps of resilience. One of the things that a lot of people struggle with who are especially in physical pain, but it applies to grieving, high levels of stress. And as you probably know better than I, there are 50 million people in the U.S. alone who live with chronic physical pain. The most common is back pain. And there are many millions, there's 57% of the adults in the U.S. say they feel a strong sense of paralysis simply because of the high level of stress that they're experiencing. And part of what people ask me for help with and what I ended up finding, especially through surgeries 4, 5, and 6, was how do I go through this in a way so that I can win back what pain does? Pain hijacks our focus, saps our energy, and frustrates our hope. What I experience day to day since surgery 7, and I've certainly experienced this before through all the years, but I get these instant blasts of agony. I never know when it's going to arrive. I was having dinner with a buddy last night, and over the dinner table, I'm writhing in there, keeling over, distraction to people in the restaurant. And how do I, as hopefully you're spared of physical pain, but physical pain demands our attention. It hijacks our focus. So I was very interested and pursued, all right, how do I win back that focus? How do I win back the energy it takes away? I found different forms of pain, physical pain, the mental stress, the emotional stress, is to some extent a question of energy. And so it's exhausting to have that kind of, those kinds of blasts of pain. How do I, again, win back the focus? spark new positive energy and move forward with hope. And so the three steps of resilience, when I first developed it, it was to do exactly that. The three steps sound simple, but they address the whole question of how do you take this journey with pain and transform it into a way with that even perpetually can grow, create new forms of energy for navigating the pain. And the steps are very simple. What happens in each step is rich, though. The first one is tune in. The second is plan. Make a choice. And the third is be your best. Follow through. That first step, tune in, is so key. Actually, I'm going to go back to your book again. There is one particular part early on in your book where you wrote about these monthly meetings gave you a space where I was understood, did not have to explain my grief, and where I felt safe. One of the most important things I found for myself and for others to do by tuning in is to get the sense of understanding. Here's an example of how I've used some of the marketing and advertising years and strategies of helping to influence others through different forms of communication, is that when we would develop a marketing campaign, the very first thing we always did was thought, who's the audience? Let's understand the audience so that we can better communicate, understand their motivations, understand what their thoughts are about the product or service, or maybe the very specific brand. What do they think about the competition and so forth? And the more we understand their perspectives, what drives them, the more we can communicate with them in a way to spark a positive emotional reaction with whether it's a message or an experience, and see if we can start a relationship. But the very same applies to us, especially when we're in pain. The more we understand ourselves, understand those thoughts and emotions that are swirling in that vortex, that cyclone, that tempest of thought that happens, especially after a blast of agony, there are very clear things to identify in that understanding that you can use when you get to the next step. Plan. Think about the different things that you can do. So I'll pause there just to see if you've got any thoughts on that. But that first tuning in, it's like old-fashioned radios. If we wanted to get to 106.7, if you got to 106.6, you hear some of the music or the DJ, but there's a lot of static in there. We need to tune in really clearly.
Yeah, I think tuning in is important, particularly when our body is affected by pain. I think it's good to get up first thing in the morning and see what parts of our body are talking to us, where the pain is more pronounced. See if there's a connection between the intensity of pain and our thoughts from the previous evening or a particular interaction that we had or any particular stressors that we were under. And I like the fact that you take a look at each person individually. Everybody's different. So you have to tap into what's going to motivate them the best to transcend the pain. What little hook can you put in front of them that may be different for another person, but it's going to work for this person? And it's important to understand individual differences in motivation. The other thing in the context of grief, when a person, particularly at a young age, loses their autonomy, physical autonomy because of pain, that's grief. They're losing a part of themselves. You know, it's like the football player who has his career in front of them. And I know you can identify with this, who had career college scholarships, and all of a sudden they have a debilitating injury that eliminates their identity as an athlete. So a part of who they were is gone. So now they need to grieve that. And it's grief is legitimate as loss due to death. And I think all of those things need to be factored in when I think you're working with an individual, for me, who is wrecked with pain and where that's interfered with their ability to lead a productive life.
Your point about the uniqueness of each person's experience, what they bring to any kind of pain experience, what they bring into their grieving, each person's resilience is going to look different. And what the plan to be your best approach is designed to do is to help facilitate them in their own unique way, find what their strengths are, what strengths can be introduced and developed in their own unique way. And that it sets each person on a path to grow perpetually their own unique resilience and what thriving looks like to them. And it actually is designed to grow with them. So it's so important. It's got to be that way. I'm sure you've read books or methods for different forms of grieving or even resilience or how to navigate anything that's painful, whether it's a Stoic approach or others. And some of them have a sort of black and white view. This is the only way to do it. And this is my way. This is the way you've got to do it. And actually that has the potential to cause more pain than help.
Yeah, one of the things in my own grief journey, Rick, is I never enlisted the help of gurus, because gurus will say, this, it's my way or no other way. And I've never believed that. You know, what resonates with individuals are going to be different depending on their experiences, their preferences, and their beliefs. And we have to be able to create a space where we can meet individuals where they're at and provide them with the tools and empower them with the tools based on their own unique perspective. So that's, I have never really put much stock in gurus for that reason, because gurus don't do an individualized approach. This is what's going to work for me, so it's going to work for you. No, that doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
The other thing is, I like it. I got to, before I forget, plan to be your best. And I'm sure you've read Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements. One of his four basic tenets of life is do your best. Our best is always going to look different depending on the circumstances, but you always do your best given the circumstances that you're dealing with. And I think that is, plan to be your best, not plan to be perfect, not plan to be excellent, but plan to be your best. And however that best looks for you is, we're going to nurture that to its full capacity.
Exactly. Over the past several years, actually, it was even before I started working on the book, there was a friend of mine who came to me and said, Rick, what does it mean to plan to be your best? I need a definition of that. And I knew where we were going to get together to talk about it. So I started searching the web, a lot of Google searches for other people's definitions of it. And I found scores of websites that would lay out these 18 different ways to be your best, 26 different ways to be your best, 28 different ways to be your best. But I knew my friend was wanting a nice, tight description. And so what I ended up doing is I came down with this. Let me break it down for you this way. It's your greatest strengths in action. And there are three parts to that. First, your greatest. What makes them great, what makes them strengths in action great, are that they are exceptional, as in uniquely your own way, exceptional for yourself, but also for others. If we're to live life loving our others as ourselves and loving our Creator, that's what I take to heart as part of a definition of what's going to be my best. It's not going to be just good for me. It's going to be unique. It's going to be exceptional for others. So that's the first part. Strengths, what we've been talking about, are those qualities that are so the combination of what's natural, comes natural, things that we might actually enjoy developing. They're tied to our values, tied to our beliefs, tied to our sense of identity. And because we've got certain strengths, one of the things I was just writing about in the book is that you might be exhausted from your journey with pain or exhausted through the grieving, but you still have strengths. And so it's a question of, back to that question about energy, how do we look for ways to spark new energy? How do we look for ways of preserving energy, healthy ways of spending energy? So that strengths part is what we look at and work through on an ongoing basis. And actually finding from each of the steps on the three steps of resilience, finding energy, but also there's both strengths and energy and actions that come out of the eight domains of thriving. Every time we go into any one of those domains, we're going to come out with greater everything from wisdom, greater conviction, new sources of strength, and what actions to take. But then the last part, your greatest strengths in action. It occurred to me at some point that, you know, we're at our best only in the now, only when we are acting on those strengths that are uniquely ours, that are good for me and good for others. So your greatest strengths in action is my version of what it means to be your best.
It sounds like a very empowering, a very individualized approach, and a very freeing approach.
Indeed, and I'm reacting to that word freedom is because seeking to be free from so many different things has been what I've been passionate about being part of my journey with pain and resilience. And it's interesting, I've, especially during the past several years that have been so challenging, and as I'm making progress on the book, I've found that it's been very helpful to look even back in the earliest part of my life, childhood, and then through my teens, including, especially when I was going through surgeries 1, 2, and 3, how I was experiencing pain, how other people around me, family and friends and so forth, were reacting to my pain and all that I'm dealing with. Because that created a foundation that, or let me say, maybe more of a pattern, patterns of my own thinking that factors into how I'm experiencing this journey now. I found I needed to address some things, including a trauma experience that I had during those first three surgeries. And pardon me if I'm repeating myself, but I've been working on that very deliberately for the past year and a half to identify it, to understand it. And I found just a few weeks ago, I came out of a meeting with a conversation about trauma and so forth. And I had this breakthrough moment, Dave. I had realized I'm healed from that trauma. So the first thing that I did was write down this. There are 7 specific things that I've been working on during the past year and a half to get to this point. And I'm excited about it because there's this positive energy that's come from this breakthrough, this realization. And now I'm wondering, can I duplicate that with those same 7 steps, maybe in some form or another, to address the trauma experience from one surgeries 4, 5, and 6. So, and it's all part of the plan to be your best approach. It hasn't been easy. One of the things that I've done was tell the story. I spoke it out, what I experienced the day of the injury and then through the surgeries, the setbacks, and so much that I experienced. And there are times where I was just bawling. Finally, after all these years, to finally free myself, let go, do complete the grieving, if you will, to get to a point where I have this breakthrough. It's really amazing. I'm still sort of amazed by it and understanding.
You know, I think when you commit to awareness and you commit to growth, you're going to be aware of other potential growth opportunities. And a lot of times, things that happened to me early in grief after my daughter, and I call it transition to a new experience, I was able to, in later grief, look back on the early steps and see it with a fresh set of eyes and realize that I did develop some strengths, or what I learned from those experiences I've been able to apply going forward. And I think one of the things I used to do with clients is I used to ask them, what strengths have you developed from past experiences that you have transcended or successfully navigated that we can apply to this situation? What do you think is going to work from past situations in your current situations to help you make a breakthrough at this point in time as well? So I think what we learn from our past can always be applied to the present as well, too.
So true. So true. When I was first asked by the Federal Home Loan Banks to put together that conference, and that was the beginning of assembling the different parts for what's now planned to be your best. And for them, it was about leadership, about teamwork. And I shared with them that what resiliency looks like for a leader is found in this, that you've got to match the challenge, match the pain, match the uncertainty, the loss of control. You've got to match the intensity of that with an equal measure of intentionality and action. Max Dupree once wrote that he was, I believe, the son of the founder of Herman Miller, the successful corporation. And he said the definition of a leader, the first thing a leader does is define reality. The last thing a leader does is say thank you. And in between, a leader serves. And if we look at that, those three parts, but especially that serve part, the only way a leader or any of us, whether we're leading ourselves through whatever it is, or we're leading ourselves and a team of people, service requires a combination of intentionality and action. When the Federal Home Loan Banks came to me, they were flexing that intentionality muscle. They said, we need to be intentional about finding answers to our questions, finding new strategies to use to navigate this time, to lead ourselves and others through this. And so they were exercising exactly that intentionality that would lead to taking action.
And I like the part that you emphasize about servant leadership. I think that's a good part of any leader, is that I remember the late U.S. Navy SEAL commander, Richard Marcinko, who ended up becoming a consultant for numerous businesses, said something. He goes, look, I'm just a humble servant to a noble cause. And that just emphasizes servant leadership and also leading by example. You don't ask your team to do something that you yourself wouldn't do yourself or haven't done yourself. That's how you also model resiliency as well, from my perspective.
When 110%, the S in best, that represents one of the eight domains of thriving, and it stands for serve. And when we serve, if we sort of peel back the layers on it, effective service means a couple of things. One, we're understanding the needs of others around us who we're going to serve. And it does mean exactly that we need to model that leadership. It also is something that comes out of the triumph domain of thriving. That's the T in best. That's the last of the eight domains, where the essence of it is a combination of celebrating the little victories as well as answering the question, what do you want people to see in you, by the way, you are being resilient and thriving, truly modeling it. One point that I like to share, and I almost dwell on this, I'm really taking it to heart for myself, because sometimes with my baseline pain, it's usually one to two dozen blasts of pain a day. If I go out and get active, it quickly magnifies and multiplies. I have become so intentional that I will celebrate even each one of those ways that I am resilient and bounce back from a blast of pain, just as neurons that fire together, wire together. I'm perpetually working on creating a pattern that makes it easier for me to bounce back each next time.
Everything we experience is information, and the information that we take in, we can say, okay, what can I learn from this and how can I apply this moving forward, whether it be at service, developing resilient leadership, or just resilience in general? How can I use that information to help me further my goals and thrive in the face of adversity?
I will say this. Of those three steps, Dave, tune in, plan, and be your best. The plan step I found to be perhaps the most significant of the three, because we're in the planning, and often it's best to do it alone and should do it alone, but also pause in a way with someone else or even a small group of people to lower the cortisol level, and pause to think about your options for what's worked in the past that I can do now. What might I try in some future moment that might work? Or even if I'm going to try it, even if I find that it doesn't, by virtue of learning what works over time, that gets contributed to your own unique resilience toolbox, your toolkit. That's another part of Plan to Be Your Best. And I found it so powerful. For example, and pardon me if I'm repeating myself, but after I got that diagnosis that I mentioned from my orthopedic surgeon of complex regional pain syndrome, I was so upset. But the very first thing that I did when I got home was open up my plan document on my computer. And I went from tears to looking at what I can control and thinking about revising my goals to those process-oriented goals. I calmed down. I ended up seeing, I really was able to transform. As tough as that diagnosis was, I knew that when I got home and then I experienced it, when I calmed down and planned, I started writing out things that I'm going to do that I haven't done before, seeing different doctors and so forth, other practitioners to see what else might work. That was a transformative, maybe 10 minutes or so, but it changed my day. And I found, and what other people do is experience that, have a positive experience so that each next time you plan, you have a positive experience.
Yeah, I agree in the value of planning and also implementing a solid plan as well, too. I think plans tend to fall short when they're not implemented properly, when we don't take a look at other factors that can interfere with our plan and have a backup plan and a backup plan to the backup plan. It's anticipating what can, not so much what can go right, because we know what's going to go right with the plan that we contributed, but what could possibly go wrong and what contingencies do we have so that we can prepare for that. I think that further empowers us, gives us the confidence to move forward, and also lays the groundwork for developing resiliency moving forward.
You used a word earlier, transcend. And in a good planning moment, or whether it's literally seconds long, or several minutes, or maybe an hour, you're in the moment working on thinking what you've got control over, what you're learning from what you're experiencing, but you're also planning for future moment. And in that way, you're transcending time. And that's calming in and of itself. That's giving us one of the things that pain takes away, and that's confidence. For example, in my resilience toolkit, I've got over 25 go-to items. There are probably another 15 or so that I've tried and didn't work. For example, one of the things that I saw before I actually realized exactly how much, what kind of situation I've got since the last surgery, I read about someone being successful. There's an article about someone who's effective at walking out of the pain. So even though it hurt, I would walk maybe about a mile and a half almost every day to see if I could walk out of the pain. It didn't work, but it's something that I tried. I physically can walk. It's not pretty, but I think it's important to plan and actually, to your excellent point, follow through, be your best. Don't let fear hinder trying something new. Be smart, be healthy, be wise. But that's a key point.
I agree. I know you've alluded to the book numerous times. I know this is a manuscript. It's a book that's in process. Care to give our audience a sneak preview of what the book is about and when it's published, what you hope readers will take away from it? And also, if you have a tentative title for the book, that would be great. But whatever you want to share at this point.
One of the working titles, it is Plan to Be Your Best as You Navigate Pain. One descriptor or subheading is From the Depths of the Trenches of Daily Pain, This is How to Get Through It and Refill Your Sails. And it is basically going to be a life application read. It's going to walk through the developing and practicing of those three steps of resilience. It's going to have discussion questions. It's going to have encouragement to go through how to use those three steps of resilience, and then show how those very same three steps are what's applied to go through or even come back to and go through again and again, each of those eight domains. Let me dive into three steps of resilience and then maybe one or two aspects of the domains. For example, you saw me just have a shot of pain a few minutes ago. I, in my resilience toolkit, and basically filling it with good options, I know by virtue of using the three steps of resilience, sometimes I go through those three steps like that because I've been practicing them, because I know it works. I realize I've never liked being in pain in front of other people. Well, sometimes I'm in pain in front of my clients or out to dinner, like I mentioned, or I'm in a museum and I'm doubling over in pain and a distraction. I've done a lot of entertainment work in my professional life, and I've always, part of my identity is thought of myself as someone who's bringing lightness and life into any moment. So to be bringing pain into publicly the situation is something I struggled with. So I started practicing, and now, for example, when I had that shot of pain, ripped through those three steps, because I said, all right, I know what I need to do. I experienced this so many times a day, but I'm keeping my focus. My plan is to just keep tuning my focus into you, for example. And then I followed through. I bet be my best and just went right on with the conversation. Sometimes it can take going through those three steps and finding you need to spend more time with it. Sometimes it might be, you might need to spend more time in the tuning in. I fall into a mental and emotional pit probably several times a week. And sometimes I'm grieving every day. Sometimes I'll be patient in that tune in step to give myself time to do some good grief. A part of what I do is bring a long-term perspective to applying these steps. And there's so much urgency that we have when we're in pain or in the depths of grief. Urgency for relief, urgency for an absolution, whatever it might be. And that long-term perspective helps to release that, to be free from, to use that excellent point you made earlier, to free yourself from that urgency. And then in terms of another thing that I found really helpful is when I have a blast of pain is to tune in, and I know that when I choose in the plan step, I think of something that you're grateful for. And what works really well is for me to say, because it works time and time again, what I'm thankful for are those 13 scars for the 7 surgeries. For everything that I've learned through this journey of resilience and thriving, so that I'm not going to waste the pain, nor I've learned about resilience. And I immediately relaxed. My shoulders relaxed down. I hold my tension in my throat and in my shoulders to a great extent, sometimes in my back as well. But when I tune in and then choose to think about having something to be grateful for, I feel that release time and time again.
You know, and I think gratefulness and showing gratitude to me, and I don't know if there's a biochemical connection or neurotransmitter connection with this, but I would imagine that feeling gratitude is going to make us feel joy. It's going to reinforce those dopamine receptor centers in our brain, which are the pleasure seeking. And we're going to have at least a moment of calm, a moment of contentment, and maybe even a moment of euphoria, depending on what we're expressing gratitude for.
Focus. What we focus on is what we experience. A few weeks ago, where we talked about that word you just used, that wonderful word, that could be quite elusive, and that is contentment, especially when you're in pain. That we talked about it through the course of an hour conversation, simply about contentment. We talked about how do we define it? What is it like when we experience it? How do we achieve it? So forth. that there was a beautiful exercise, an example of how in a group setting, focusing on something helps people actually experience it. The same is true with anything. If we focus on gratitude, we'll experience gratitude.
What we focus on is what we end up manifesting.
Right. So true. So true. It's not easy, especially in pain. My toughest days are when I'll start having blasts of pain at a rate of a dozen an hour, or if I'm in constant pain. And there's another point. You make excellent points, Dave. There's no perfection in resilience. There's no perfection in pain management. But there are those process-oriented goals. And people can be completely confident that when they set themselves down a path and perpetually grow their own unique resilience and what it looks like to thrive, their confidence will be renewed. And, you know, here's one more marketing analysis. The single most effective marketing tactic, you call it a strategy or a tactic, that helps people go from being devoted to one brand to another, is a positive sampling experience. And virtually all the marketing success stories that I have include in the strategy, whether it's been a hospital, for example, Tufts Healthcare, one of the top hospitals in Boston, they were in pain that no one knew who they were, where they were, and what they're good at. And the referring physician stopped sending patients to them. They were starting to fail as a hospital, even though they were superb. But we ended up going through an exercise of re-anchoring them in their identity, refreshing how to express their identity, and then telling positive success stories. One of the stories that we told was of Paul Pierce, the famous basketball player. Mm-hmm. Early on in his years with the Celtics, I think it was might have been his first year in Boston, he was at a nightclub and got stabbed 11 times in the back of his shoulders and his neck. He went to that hospital and they saved his life. So we, in the marketing campaign, told his success story. And then it wrapped up with one simple phrase, Tufts Medical Center and the Floating Hospital for Children, the best when you need it most. And they went on to actually being the only hospital running in the black for a while. It completely transformed their future. So we can take that same lesson for ourselves and our resilience. The more we create positive experiences of our own resiliency, creates a new pattern that leads to thrive.
Absolutely. And as a Celtics fan, I was glad to hear you mention Paul Pierce. So I remember, I think it was 2008 or 2009, they won their championship, I believe, with him, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen. That was their big three back then. So they were great.
So good.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's good. So, but it's just to make that point. We're suffering pain. And when I say suffer, I mean experiencing it, but also allowing it. And part of the definition of suffer is to allow. We are well served. We're at our best when we create positive experiences for that, create those new patterns and ways to be resilient and what it looks like to thrive.
Wow, you're going to leave my listeners with quite a few tools and takeaways, but one of my last questions for you today is, if you're going to leave our listeners with the ultimate or penultimate takeaway today, what would that be?
A great question, Dave, and thank you for that. Here it is. Two things. If you're in pain, there's hope. And part of that hope is in you. You're a source of hope because you've got innate abilities to find out what it means to plan to be your best and to be intentional to the point of even getting to that time when you can say, I'm not going to waste the pain, nor what you learn about resilience. And in doing so, you find new purpose. You find a fascinating future for yourself. And there's energy in finding that purpose. There's energy in virtually everything you do to bring that purpose to life. And in your own way, with your own unique resilience, you'll find that's a way that you'll discover what it looks like to be your best.
Thank you for that, Rick.
Thank you, Dave. I'm already looking forward to our next conversation and to having you on my soon-to-be-launched podcast. It's always so good to talk to you. And one of the things that makes me so passionate about this conversation is you've given me the ability to at least try to encourage others and maybe a few nuggets of equipping people to use some helpful steps.
Well, and that's what the podcast is about. The mantras, we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. And I think you've given some valuable lessons and takeaways that can help individuals just with pain management, or even without pain management, just with the steps that you've described to develop resiliency, regardless of the challenge. I think it's been all valuable information. My final question, if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, contract with you, also find out updates about your soon-to-be-published book, what's the best way for them to do that?
RickCram.com. Thank you, Dave. At RickCram.com, you'll find all about the approach, more about me. You'll even find on the home page, as you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see some references to those three steps of resilience. And then a free downloadable PDF worksheet, one page, it's completely free, where you can actually follow the prompts, some of which we've talked about here, and you can, it's a PDF where you can just type in and fill in the different fields, make copies of it, use it for anytime you want to transform that pain experience into something where you regain your focus, spark new positive energy, and move forward with hope. So that's free for you to have. I would also say, you'll see on my website, scroll down and you'll find a link to my contact page. Give me a call. I'm here for you. I'm a holder of hope for you. And Dave, with your grief journey, I'm a holder of hope for you as well. And it's something that I do with joy.
Thank you, Rick. And thanks today for just a great conversation. My God, I look like you. I look forward to our next one.
Thank you, Dave, so much.
My pleasure. And with that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.